RunAsRadio.com. You're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell and Greg Hughes. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 247 with guest Jeremiah Peschka, recorded Monday, January 16th, 2012. Run As Radio is produced each week by Quap Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow the boys on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell. You're listening to Run As Radio, and we're having a crazy day. I have nothing to complain about, actually. There's real winter in Vancouver, but that's rare because we don't usually get snow. I thought we weren't going to get any this year, but we did that now, and so I'm happily cozied up at home with a microphone in front of me, and I've got Jeremiah Peschka on the line, who is not at home, but we'll get into that in a second. Let me introduce him for a second. Jeremiah Peschka helps developers, DBAs, and engineers build faster, robust, and scalable solutions. Microsoft SQL Server is frequently part of that solution, but other databases are also. He has worked as a database and emerging technology expert at Quest Software, researching new trends and technologies around data storage. Before that, Jeremiah worked across many industries as a system administrator, developer, and DBA, and has been involved in all aspects of application development and deployment. And you're part of the Brent Ozar group these days, aren't you, Jeremiah?
Yeah. I founded Brent Ozar PLF with Brent, Kendra Little, and Tim Ford.
Nice. And a fun bunch of folks. In fact, I got Brent coming on the show in a couple of weeks. So it's always fun to talk to you guys. You have a good time playing with SQL Server, that's for sure. But you're not a SQL Server exclusive kind of guy. What's your other favorite database?
My other favorite database is actually Postgres and React. Postgres is just fantastic. And then React gives you a lot of flexibility. And we talked a lot about that previously.
Yeah, I actually am a Postgres fan myself. I had a project and went into it somewhat tentatively and then came to really admire, you know, the little database that could.
That is a fantastic way to describe it. They do such a great job of making a tool that, you know, it works, and it works phenomenally well, and their default settings are really paranoid about data, and you can tune it to be, you know, ridiculously fast, and it's so well documented. It reminds me a lot of SQL Server. You could just view the source code.
Yeah, the big difference is, and I've found this true of every other database, SQL Server is the only database I've found that no matter how I craft a query to return a given set of results, I'll get the same query plan. And Postgres and other databases too, you know, how you craft the query matters. You have to look at the plan and tweak and tune and that, and you just don't do that in SQL Server anymore. And I think we've forgotten that, you know, you can write, I've seen some really nasty queries written that actually ran great data plans. And then, you know, you can write a beautifully crafted query, but because your data structures are a mess, the query plan's a disaster.
Absolutely. I even took one of the Microsoft Stochastic queries to generate awful, awful correlated subqueries.
Yes.
And I ran it on SQL Server 2012, and it produced the correct execution plan. It removed the correlated subquery from it.
It just looked at it, you didn't mean to do that. Let me get to the results you actually want without sucking, and just got to work.
And this is a query from Books Online that says, this query will hurt your server. And I ran it, it's like, no, it's beautiful now. Thanks, query engine team.
Yeah, not anymore. And if you're not a deeply immersed in databases, you don't necessarily know what we're talking about here, because this has been the main job, I think, of DBAs for a long time. Other than the basic set up an account, tear down account, set privileges and so forth, tweaking and tuning queries to get good results. And for the past few years, SQL Server just took that job away. It writes better query plans than you could ever hope to write.
Largely for the most part. You can still do some insane things with it, but a lot of that just comes down to when you rewrite it, just, well, I should break this up into steps instead of one 40,000 line report.
Right. Yeah. I always resisted the mother of all query approach to things.
It's tough to resist it, but good for you for actually resisting that approach.
Just recognizing that that's fun for me and not fun for anybody else, right? That's
exactly.
The whole thing.
Yeah, you got to make sure even your database code is maintainable.
Now, I wanted to talk to you about ORMs. Although, really, I mean, an ORM is an object relational model, right?
So it does stand for a couple of things, unfortunately.
Of course.
There's also object relational mapper.
Right.
Which is the other sort of term for it, which is what a lot of things like nHibernate and LLPL Gen Pro and Entity Framework do, is they take your, you know, object schema and they map it to your relational schema, and they do some convoluted magic in between.
Now, these are developer tools. Why do I, as a DBA, care about these things at all?
So DBAs, you know, should care about it. These are actually how I got into databases. As a developer, I discovered ORMs and discovered what cool things databases could do. And as a DBA, we want to care about it because developers are going to be using these tools to ramp up their development time. They don't, you know, context switching between languages can be expensive mentally, and they just would rather say person.find,
right,
rather than actually, okay, well, I'm going to open a management studio. How do I create a store procedure again? Oh, yeah, and, you know, write their SQL statement. They're just going to do this in a really easy way, and it's going to automatically do a lot of work for them.
Well, and I think you've hit on the key point here, which is, generally speaking, ORMs and stored procedures don't get along.
Right.
The statement I've seen sitting in the DBA seat is that the developer said, I don't want any more stored procedures. I'm just going to use this ORM. It'll write the SQL for me. Everything's going to be beautiful. Don't you worry, Mr. DBA man.
That's usually the case, yeah. And that was my approach to them, too, when I first found them.
Yeah, and it seems like a big lie.
It is a big lie. But the nice thing is, you know, for most applications, they are really just pure OLTP. It's just, give me a row. I'm going to write a row. You know, it's just I'm going to delete this. I'm going to read this. It's a onesie-twosie kind of thing.
Right.
So it doesn't really need the tuning that DBAs can provide to, you know, big reporting queries or multi-page, you know, paged out paging queries.
Yeah, there's not a lot of tweaking and tuning to an insert query.
No, there really isn't. Occasionally, you want to have better indexes on your foreign keys, but that's about it.
Right. But that, even then, that's not something that necessarily needs a stored procedure or anything like that. I see stored procedures, just more, their value in more the abstraction layer, that I can modify the data structures without having to change the code. And and as a sort of a boundary layer for validation.
Absolutely. Yeah. I always like to have my validation as both a database guy and someone who writes code. I like my validation to be in both the app and the database.
Right.
And my app validates all rules for that data, including the database rules and the application rules. And then any access into the database, either in the stored procedure or, you know, however the data is getting in there, I validate all the universal data rules there. So all of my data is always correct.
Right. I mean, if you're going to take away my stored procedure as a validation path, I guess I can stick with declarative validations, right? Stick constraints on all my columns and things like that to basically force the failure of the query if you don't obey the rules.
Yeah, absolutely. And the nice thing with ORMs too as well, developers say, well, I don't have to write these stored procedures. I don't have to do all this extra work. At the same time, the benefit we get is, you know, the ORMs make it really easy to develop code quickly. And then down the road, you know, once that schema is in place, once we have we know what the application is going to look like, we know what the data is going to look like in the app layer as well as in the data layer, then we can come back, and where we need to have validation, we can add stored procedures and change the ORM to actually use stored procedures instead of just using plain old SQL.
And I think you're just implying on the crazy part, and I think the thing that offends DBAs or database-centric folks in general, which is you're going to write code first. You're not even going to design a database. There will be no cocktail napkin here.
I think a lot of developers really do like that approach, and I like to think of it, before I even write code, I really do get on a whiteboard, and I think about entities, and I figure out all my nouns and my verbs,
right,
and I try to think of how it's all going to work together. But yes, ORMs typically are used in a code-first environment, which does drive data people absolutely bonkers.
Well, it's two issues here. One is, how often do we actually get to greenfield an app to the point where there's not a database already hanging around?
Yeah, that's pretty rare in my experience.
Yeah, and the second issue, of course, is I don't trust your fancy little tool to make databases that make any sense at all.
There is that, and you know, one of the things, I think this is a really good place for DBAs to use a lot of the domain level knowledge that they have, and you know, as the developers are building the application, work with the developers to, you know, figure out how the data model is going to evolve. And even if the application model looks one way and the correct way that the data work looks, you know, should look a completely different way. It's really easy with an ORM to build mappings between completely separate structures.
Right. So, and I guess I can also imagine that you're going to end up with a hybrid, right? That customer tables and product tables are already going to exist, but there's going to be a few new tables that this new app's going to need, and that can be generated by the ORM.
Yeah, exactly. You know, the ORM doesn't have to be responsible for all generation. And likewise, the DBA doesn't have to be responsible for all that stuff. Because, you know, DBAs have a lot of roles that they have to do. They have to keep things running. They have to provide tuning. Sometimes they're called on for this data architecture or data modeling. They have a lot of stuff to do. And let's face it, a lot of these decisions more come down to validating, yes, this is a sane choice, or no, you really shouldn't be storing a social security number as a float.
Is there any chance that an ORM is actually going to make that choice, or that somehow the developer said that?
I've never actually seen anyone do it. I have seen social security numbers stored as integers before, and so like, why are we adding them together? Is that what happens when people get married? Is that how children's numbers get made? Is
right.
It a bit shift? They're like, well, no, like that's a char 9, guys.
Yes,
let's be real.
Yeah, it doesn't change. It's not mathematical. Just because it has numbers in it doesn't mean it's a number.
Right. Yeah, that's where DBAs can get involved in this too. Is, you know, developers, you know, not making picking on them. Developers don't always make awful decisions, and they usually don't.
Well, at least not intentionally, anyway.
not intentionally.
I got to imagine that they make awful choices generally out of ignorance, not malice. That they just don't understand what the consequences of that decision is.
That's typically, I think, why most bad choices get made. And that's where, you know, DBAs can come in and apply a lot of that knowledge. They know about, okay, well, I know that SQL Server does it this way, and I know that I'm going to be able to take advantage of these indexing techniques or this querying technique if you do it a different way. So let's use this data type instead of this first one.
Right.
This section of Run As Radio is sponsored by Secret Server, the password management software for IT admins. Secret Server helps you manage local admin passwords and service accounts the right way. Get your free 30-day trial for Secret Server at runasradio.com/secret-server.
Now, I'm just trying to figure out what the workflow looks like for this. So the application developer is working with his ORM, and this is actually generating into some kind of test database a set of tables, and then as a DBA, I can pick those tables up and look at them and then have a discussion with the developer.
Yeah, that's definitely something you can do. And, you know, depending on the tools you use, if we're talking the .NET world, obviously, since we're talking SQL Server, it's pretty easy to even, you know, when you generate that schema from your ORM tool, you can even generate it into Visual Studio and then use the database developer tools to share that schema with the DBA. So they may not even have to look at your dev database. They could just look at your schema and talk to you about it.
Right, and actually read through the schema, which gets checked in as part of the build anyway.
Right, exactly.
And if you haven't used that tool, it's awfully nice.
Yeah, it actually is a sort of plug for a great blog post. A guy named Jamie Thompson, who blogs on SQL Blog, wrote basically a mini book on working with Visual Studio 2010 database project.
Wow.
And he put it out there for free for everyone to look at. Because there are a lot of tricks to it, I've found, that once you figure them out, they make life easy. But until you find the trick, or until you get angry enough to go search for a blog post, there's just some irritating things about it.
So I'm thinking further along the workflow. So this is sort of initial iteration where they're generating some scripts that I can now read as a DBA and take a look at and talk to them about data types, and maybe even, can I alter those scripts in any way? Like, how do I apply my changes and not have them wrecked by another iteration of the ORM?
I think that's a point where it's a process, you know, a human process, where you do have to work with them and say, well, I'm going to make this change. I want you guys to take a look at what I'm doing, but here's what I've done. You'll need to change your ORM to reflect what I've got in here. A lot of it depends on, you know, how you're regenerating things.
Right.
A lot of ORMs, when you add a new column, you know, they if you don't have an existing database, then they don't, you know, they'll just regenerate a whole database. Or if they're not aware of the changes in the database, you know, you could get some odd things happening. So some of it does come down to ORM specific things where you may have to change a mapping file and then Hibernate. AD frameworks, you'll have to go into that DBML and change some XML most likely. in LLBL Gen Pro, you just point it back at your database and say, hey, I changed some columns. Make sure this still works. And it will figure out how.
Pick this back up.
Yeah.
Yeah, which and I have a lot of respect for LLBL Gen. They've been doing this for a long time, and they have, a cleaner understanding of the DBA role and the dev role to let both parties play and have the sum of their knowledge appear in a central location.
Yeah, you know, oddly enough, I'm very spoiled because that's actually the first ORM I worked with. And it really is sort of the Cadillac of ORMs in many ways. It has features that a lot of people are now just adding. And it really does, like you said, it really respects the role of you may have a data modeler and an architect and a DBA and developers.
Right.
And it allows all of those people to play and look at the database in ways that make sense to them.
Make contributions that way. I mean, does it make sense for the DBA to actually, if I'm looking at, I need to apply some constraints here, just come back to the developer and say, in your ORM, indicate these constraints and they should show up in the database? I guess that depends on the ORM, right?
I think, yeah, a lot of it does depend on the tools. And one of the difficult things, I think, one of the sticking points for a lot of DBAs is there is very little documentation out there for ORMs that's written from the perspective of, you know, from a standpoint of, I'm a DBA, how do I deal with this tool in my environment?
Right.
A lot of it's just people being very, very curmudgeonly and be like, ah, I found some in Hibernate yesterday. Rah.
Yeah, and it's all automatically bad.
Right, and it's not automatically bad. It's a tool. It's just like a crowbar. You can use it to pry things apart, or you can break into houses with it.
Yeah, and it can be a little brute force at times, can't it?
Right, and a lot of it does come down to, you know, I think from a DBA's perspective, talking to the developers and making sure you know, there's a lot of understanding about what's going on in the process. And it does mean, you know, working with them directly, as distasteful as that may sound sometimes, but, you know.
I got to talk to a developer. Are you crazy?
Yeah, I know. Terrifying. But, you know, understanding at least a little bit of, you know, some of the things they're trying to do, some of the concepts that they're doing, because there are even some things that you're never going to notice that an ORM might do, like, you know, the problem of, you know, the N+1 select problem, which is where, you know, you might be doing something called lazy loading, which is where your ORM just loads stuff when it actually gets called in the code. So if you want to display a person's order, you pull back the person, and then you loop through their orders, and then it's going to go and find all the orders after it finds the person. So you may get a lot of extra select statements being run. And unless you're actually consciously running SQL Server Profiler and looking at what's happening in the ORM, it can be really tough to detect things like that.
Right, right. And I think what's scary here is at that point, the developer's not necessarily sure when queries are running. Like as a DBA, if I'm looking for a real slow running query, I could find it and then I can't find it. I could talk to the developer. He has no idea where that happened. Who wrote that query? Because the ORM wrote it.
Right, yeah, and I've been in a class before where we've had to literally grab that text out of SQL Server Profiler and search in the code base, and then, of course, you don't really know what's happening, but then you have to, like, try to reverse engineer that query as to where it might come from in the code base to figure out which objects are involved, and then go track it down, and that can be really tricky to do.
Yeah, no kidding. And an interesting problem, the idea that, you know, you can't search necessarily on the query because the query's not actually in there. It's part of a ORM expression of retrieving data.
Right. And, you know, one of the nice things is the people who, you know, some of the people who work on nHibernate, Ayande Rahim, he did nHibernate Profiler, nhprof, which is a fantastic tool for developers to use. And it's basically like SQL Server Profiler, but it runs on your workstation, and you just sort of add an extra reference in when you're in debug mode, and it supplies all these profiler flags so you can track down which queries are being generated and then line that back up to which file it's coming from. So from a developer standpoint, you could run through a bunch of tests, you know, with nhprof enabled, and then isolate the query that's actually being generated and causing the problem.
For sure, and I'll happily plug Ayande. I'm a huge fan. He's also made a profiler for Entity Framework as well.
Yeah, I remember that actually when he released that. And Entity Framework upsets me a little bit as far as ORMs go, just because, you know, it's free, it's from Microsoft, so a lot of people are using it.
Yes.
So nobody ever got fired for buying Big Blue. But unfortunately, Entity Framework is still really, really young, and it does a lot of things that other people figured out ways around long ago.
Right. So you're really embracing, yes, you got it for free, but, you know, it was worth what you paid.
In some instances, yeah. Yeah. They fixed a lot of the issues with it. You know, there was an issue where it would generate parameters of random length. So if I searched for singles Rob, it would, you know, create a var chart 3. And then if I searched for Dave, it would create a var chart 4. And the problem with that, you know, which is obvious to SQL Server people, which is not obvious to anyone else, is that it's going to generate two execution plans.
Yes.
And you get lots more memory being used.
Well, and you're just going to make a mess of caching, and like, you're just undermining SQL's ability to make things fast.
Exactly. And yet the Entity Framework team has fixed that, but you're still dealing with, you know, release cycles at a big company rate. They're
sure.
Not, you know, it's not like open source project are like, oh, I can fix this right now. I'll release a, you know, x.x.1.
No, it'll come sometime later. Now, is there a point in the tuning side, once I can get some iteration going, we're starting to do some generation, is there a point where I can start injecting stored procedures where I could see performance opportunities or safety involved?
I would definitely suggest that to everyone, that, you know, once you start working with it, the ORMs are great for rapid development.
Right.
They tend to just sort of generate, I think this is an acceptable query type of queries.
Yes.
You know, it's like, I've been working with SQL for 4 months. This is good enough, whatever. And at that point, most ORMs, even Entity Framework, supports the ability to replace a selector and insert, update, and delete with a stored procedure. So that way, you know, you can go in and you can replace that. You can provide whatever tuning you want as a DBA in the stored procedure and say, okay, guys, well, you've got this working. Your app works. Can we please make this change in your mapping to use this stored procedure for this object? You wire that up and it works beautifully.
Yeah, and it's an interesting point that the idea of this, let's have this rapid cycle of quick development where I don't have to constantly be pounding on stored procedure builders and so forth until the very end, till we're actually, okay, we're ready for a build. Now we sort of move into that performance tuning stage, or, you know, we care about those things. We've got the feature set in place. Now we talk about tuning and tweaking and can get more people involved to do higher performance or less resource intensive job.
Yeah, exactly. I don't really need to tune a lookup by primary key. That's always going to be as fast as it's going to get.
Right.
One select. And that kind of stuff, you don't want to cache plans for that. You don't want to keep that around forever. It's just annoying to have to modify that. But yeah, for other things, when you have to do a search, you may want to, you know, write your search in a certain way. Or, you know, there's sometimes when you have to conform to complex data structures in the business. One of the ones you frequently comment on is you may have a product table, and the product table doesn't actually have a price in it because you have a price history table.
Of course.
And these structures may exist, or you may have price structures that vary from day to day and hour to hour, and so you have to look up the price appropriately. And running that kind of query in an ORM isn't always pleasant to write for a developer, but you just go to the DBA and say, hey, I have this painful spot. Let's get a stored procedure for this one thing.
You know, you keep implying a comfortable conversation back and forth between developer and the DBA.
I do keep implying that, and I think it's really, really important for that relationship to be a good one and not be adversarial.
But, you know, with your last statement there, you've implied the bidirectionality of it. There are going to be points where the ORM is going to be ugly working with a database, and you can ask the DBA to solve that problem for you from a developer perspective. And there are going to be points where the ORM is making mistakes, essentially, that the DBA can see that the developer probably can't see, that he can push back to the developer to fix. This is a two-way street.
Yeah, absolutely. This definitely needs to be a two-way street, and it's I think it's a good point too to get a lot of that communication going between two teams who normally don't talk a lot.
Well, and I think one of the reasons they've broken down is often the productivity of a developer working with a database is impaired because the DBA is awfully busy and there's an awful lot of queries to write. In some ways, it seems like the way you presented this here, I'm going to take all the queries off the table that you really didn't need you to write, so we can just focus on the few that I did need help with.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that one of the most important things too with ORMs for people to communicate with DBAs and for DBAs to understand is developers aren't trying to get rid of DBAs. They're not trying to replace DBAs for, you know, high-end query writing or query tuning. They're trying to get the garbage queries away from the DBA and away from the developer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nobody wants to write select statements to pull all the columns back from a customer table. It is nobody wants to write that. It's boring.
Yeah, and it's nothing. Or the insert statement. I mean, there's a lot of very simple queries here that let the machine generate them. And funny part is I can imagine the machine's going to make fewer mistakes on those simple queries.
Yeah, exactly. I've also said I automate everything I can that's boring, because boring things, boilerplate things, are where I make mistakes.
Right, because I'm not paying and close attention.
Yeah, exactly. I don't pay attention. I get bored. I'm thinking about going home and playing Minecraft or Skyrim or Knights of the Old Republic or whatever, you know, or all three at once on three separate computers.
Yes.
And, you know, I'm not thinking about where to put the comma.
So these profiling tools, these still are developer tools. This is not something the DBA necessarily wants in their toolkit.
Yeah, I wouldn't think so, because, you know, you still have to be either running unit tests or writing some sort of test to generate, you know, that's going to generate the activity that's going to make that query happen. You still have to fire up Visual Studio, open up your .NET project,
right,
run it, and run this profiler. And just because it's a profiler, and it does look a lot like SQL Server profiler,
right,
it's still a developer tool. And, you know, one of the things that developers can do for DBA is to make life better, is in your connection string, you can set an application name.
Right.
And so set your application name, and that really makes it really easy for the DBA to look and to tune your queries.
But I also, coming at it from a DBA's perspective, I'm going to ask that developer to have that profiler available so that if I do dig a query out that I'm pretty unhappy with, he has a better chance of finding it with his profiler.
Exactly, yeah. It's you know, it's a lot of communication that has to happen in here, and you know, when you actually start digging in. And yeah, developers should be aware of the other tools that they can use to help them find queries.
Sure. So, Jeremiah, are there projects we should not use ORMs on?
Probably yes. If you're doing complex reporting, I would say that's a definite no-go for an ORM.
Right.
ORMs are great when you are working with objects and you're dealing with all the wonderful things that object-oriented programming gives you, all that behavioral modeling.
Right.
Anytime you're doing that, yes, ORM. Anytime you're doing more along the lines of, I am doing massive data processing, I am delivering reports to users, I'm doing number crunching in the database.
Yeah.
You know, where you just need to have handcrafted, high-performance SQL. You don't want a tool generating that.
When you think about working with objects deeply, it's really the OLTP kind of stuff, entering orders, that interactive, looking at data and modifying data quickly. Analytics is, I tend to shove that over into the OLAP space anyway, but it's along those lines.
Absolutely. Not everyone has OLAP expertise or the budget for an OLAP consultant. So sometimes we make do with relational warehousing, but yeah, anytime you're doing anything that's analytical at all, don't have your tools do that.
Yeah. So definitely that feels like there's a class of app. I mean, I guess it's developer intensive apps where there's a lot of creation, and recognizing also that I think developers are iterating faster these days, that they're trying to ship stuff every couple of weeks.
Yeah, developers are definitely able to iterate very quickly. You can ship code, and when that speed of feature development is the most important thing,
right,
that's, you know, where you need to go. And a lot of it boils down to what's your feature. As, you know, Jeff Atwood has famously said, performance is a feature.
Yep.
And if that's your feature, you know, stop looking at the ORM and start looking at how you can optimize that SQL.
Yeah.
Of the time, though, the feature is a new widget or a fancy thing.
Yeah, and this is the difference between performance in execution and performance in delivering new code. You know, I'm a guy who's done lots of web performance tuning over the years, and I'm a big believer in you've got to ship that before you possibly know what you need to tune. It's
absolutely
only when it's exercised that you have a sense of the truth. If you spend all your time trying to tune in advance, you tune stuff that didn't need to be tuned, and you waste a lot of time.
Yeah, I definitely would say, you know, ship the code, figure out where it's slow, and shipping a new mapping can sometimes just be as you know, when you change it from using dynamic code to using a stored procedure,
right,
it can sometimes be as simple as uploading an XML file, and you've changed it.
Yeah, interesting point that you're now actually breaking apart the compiled code and the mapping code with these mapping tools.
Yeah, you it depends on which one, but you definitely can break that apart and you know, maybe potentially update them independently of each other. Or even still, you may have a mapping DLL and your behavior DLL is on the outside of it, so you can just upload a new DLL, restart the service, and everything works.
Yeah, and I could see that, because that's something I definitely have done with stored procedures, create a sense of abstraction between the application and the database so that when we need to you know, decompose the sales database into monthly tables, the developer didn't have to change the code at all. We just made that invisible to him through stored procedures.
Absolutely. That's really why I love stored procedures and views, is I'm just creating a new service layer for
right.
people to call. You know, and it doesn't matter if it's in an XML table or across 50 tables or in one big denormalized table. Mm-hmm. Nobody has to care.
You don't need to know. But the fact that I could probably still do a trick like that using an ORM, just replacing out that mapping file, that, from a database perspective, is pretty compelling to me. I don't know if my developer will initially understand. I'm going to have to talk to him about it. But it seems like a possibility, at least.
It's a distinct possibility. You know, again, you hit on the big thing that I like about ORMs. It gets people talking,
yeah.
Which is never a bad thing in business.
Yeah, I tend to agree.
And it gets people educated about where the strengths are. So that way, nobody, you know, you don't have to worry. And developers can say, aha, in this situation, I need to leverage the database. But in this situation, I know I can use application code because it's going to be faster.
Right. Yeah, and if you have more of those conversations, I think everybody ends up respecting each other more and you get more work done in less time.
Absolutely.
And never underestimate the value of pizza as a conversational lubricant.
Exactly.
There are very few problems that cannot be solved with lunch.
That is the truth, my friend.
Yeah, that's where I go. Hey, Jeremiah, great to talk to you.
Great to talk to you as well. Thank you much for your
and
time.
And we'll point folks to your great blog post on ORMs for the DBA as well, so they can go grab that. And thanks for coming on Run As Radio.
Thank you for having me. It was a great time.
And I'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.